Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. We're not taking live calls. However, we invite you to stay with us and enjoy the broadcast. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
And welcome to our very special Labor Day edition of Catholic Answers Live. I am your host, Cy Kellett. And the Catholic Church teaching on labor is what we will – well, it's part of what we'll discuss for this Labor Day. It's contained within a larger body of teaching called Catholic Social Teaching. And here to discuss that with us is our guest, Mark Brumley, the president of Ignatius Press, one of the nation's largest Catholic publishers and distributors of videos and music. And he's a former apologist here at Catholic Answers and the author of – Mark, I don't know. What are you the author of? I'll let you say –
You don't want to mess up again, I know.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I know. Well, I'm author of several things, but I think where you're going is the book, The Seven Deadly Sins of Apologetics.
Yeah,
I think that's what you're talking
that
about.
That was where I was going, but I lost my nerve at the last second because as our regular listener might recall, I have messed up the title of that book more times than certainly more times than is reasonable or responsible. So
now it's a psychological thing with you. It's a freeze-up moment.
It is. I freeze now when I get to it, so I just let you do it this time. Everything is well at Ignatius Press, I hope?
Yes, everything is well. I want to go back to books. You may be hearing a bell ringing in the background. That's a call to prayer. This isn't a mosque, but we do have daily prayer here at Ignatius Press. People don't realize this, some people don't realize that Catholics pray daily. But anyway, I was going to say, go back to the topic of things I've written. One of the things I've written is a book, or contributed to a book called The Five Issues That Matter Most, which is on the topic of our topic today. So Catholic social teaching is explored, some of Catholic social teaching is explored in that. Now, you want to ask about Ignatius Press. I'm sorry, I missed your question. What was that question again?
No, I was just saying everything. I assume everything. I hope everything's well at Ignatius Press. That's all. I've learned not to ask you too much about Ignatius Press because then you start selling Ignatius Press products.
No, that's not really true.
No,
like I shouldn't mention Ducat social teaching.
Right. Well, people. You definitely should mention that.
Things are going very well here at Ignatius Press. We're working diligently to get some really good books out. And, of course, you know we have our partnership with the Augustine Institute on Formed, which now includes you guys. You guys are also part of the Formed team, the digital platform for video content and e-books.
A very conscious project to help form hearts and minds because we are being formed, whether we know it or not, all the time. And society is forming us in, or at least attempting to form us in all kinds of ways that may be contrary to the gospel in many instances. So it's really something to have that formed there. It's a very intentional effort to help form us in the light of all the other formation we're getting in the light of the gospel.
Absolutely, and of course, you know, there are things. This kind of is related to social teaching because we talk about movies, entertainment, which is good. Entertainment, it brings something valuable to life. So there's nothing wrong with being entertained and watching movies and things of that sort. But there's a process of formation of one's worldview and one's value response and all of that that occurs when you watch a movie. And so you have to be mindful of what you're watching. And that means some things you shouldn't watch, but even things that are perfectly okay, you need to be thoughtful about. And one of the things about Formed is that we have good, solid, among other things, we have teaching programs and documentaries and all of that, but we also have entertainment that is consistent with a Catholic worldview and goes into forming a Catholic mind and a Catholic heart. So that's a tie-in to Formed.
Well, it being Labor Day, there's two purposes for Labor Day in the United States. The first is to signal now it's time to go back to school. That one we won't discuss, but it's also a celebration of the labor movement, the American labor movement, and I suppose which is itself part of a worldwide labor movement. Is it okay for Catholics to celebrate the labor movement?
it's not only okay, it's something that Catholics, all other things being equal, ought to be inclined to do, because labor is an important part of life, and a proper understanding of work and the role of work in our lives is part of what it means to be a disciple in the modern world. So yeah, I'd say it's important.
And there was a time when it wasn't clear, however, that the labor movement and the Catholic Church were compatible with one another.
Yes. I mean, if you go back to the 19th century, in the industrialization of society, there was a huge change in the way many people worked, and many people, we had a shift to a more urban population. I don't think that happened in the United States until around 1900, by that point in the United States, most people lived in cities. Prior to that, most people lived in a rural context, although cities obviously still had a major role to play. But in the 19th century, especially in Europe and in the United States, there was this whole question of industrialization and the emergence of factories and mass scale production, and the impact it was having on people's work lives and their lives more generally. And as many people will be aware, there was a movement in the 19th century influenced by Karl Marx to understand labor, understand the economic dimension of life in a way that was sympathetic to the situation of workers whose working conditions were often horrendous. But also, this was an understanding that was at odds in many very key ways with a Christian understanding of human beings and a Christian understanding of the role of government and a Christian understanding of freedom and property and so on. So on the one hand, you had the situation of workers in the middle of this Industrial Revolution and working conditions being dire. On the other hand, you had the accumulation of large amounts of capital and property in the hands of relatively few, and you had the rise of Marxism and forms of socialism that sought to speak on behalf of the worker, but did so in such a way that was at odds with a truly Christian or just vision of society. So, the church was responding to some of the efforts on the part of speaking on behalf of people who are working, especially those in factories and things of that sort, working under dire conditions, responding to that, their situation sympathetically, but also opposing the Marxist or communist ways of defending the rights of workers and speaking out for workers. So, yeah, there was a time in which it wasn't clear. Somebody said, I'm speaking for workers or I'm speaking for labor.
Right.
What exactly that meant. That was a long way to answer your question, but
well, no,
I think that put a little context to it.
Well, I do think we often forget what that 19th century industrialization did. And that you hit both sides of it. I mean, the one side is it really was a massive burden placed on the working poor and that in the cities, and really an exploitation of them in many ways. But then there was this other side of it. And I really appreciate that you got to that. Pope Leo XIII, then in his what is really one of the most important encyclicals in the history of the church, it must. I imagine you would agree with that. Rerum Novarum, in 1891, he answers the question about. Or at least begins to answer the question about the relationship between the church and the labor movement.
Yes, he's trying to deal with the question. Well, in fact, the name Rerum Novarum means new things, a new situation. What's the new situation that he's referring to? The situation of kind of radical or revolutionary change on the one hand in the social structure that came about as a result of industrialization, and these super wealthy people and the working class in relation to them on the one hand. On the other hand, revolution in the sense that there were those who thought that in order to secure justice for workers, you had to do things like abolish private property or put the ownership of the means of production, as they're referred to, into the hands of government. So it was a period of revolutionary change, not all of which was good, much of which was bad. And so he's trying to address that. He is making his statements about a just social order in the context of those new things or new realities.
And following Rerum Novarum, in many places and in many ways, it is the case that local bishops or pastors or the local laity did in fact become allies of the labor movement.
Yes, absolutely. And then there's a certain sense in which there's a kind of natural fit there. Now, I know sometimes non-Catholics, secular people especially, won't get this because they'll say, well, wait a minute, you know, being on the side of the working class, as it's sometimes referred to, or the labor movement and so on, that's really a very democratic thing. And that seems to them to be at odds with the idea of the church, because the church is understood by them as being this very hierarchical society. But that's a misunderstanding. Yes, the church is a hierarchical society, but that hierarchy exists, that structure, that sacred order exists so that the church can be effective in serving. So, and we know that authority understood in the Catholic sense is the authority of service. Just Jesus said, referring to himself as the Son of Man, this figure that had divine authority to judge in the Old Testament, he says, the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Well, likewise, authority or hierarchy in the church is a ministry of service. So it makes sense that local bishops who exercise that hierarchical office would see among the people that they are called to serve, those who are working, who lack access to large amounts of wealth, who earn their living every day, who live off of their labor. Not everybody lives off of his labor. Some people have assets such that they can live off of those assets or the property. But the working class in that sense, the people who are actually living off of their labor, that category of persons is very dear to the church, as it was very dear to our Lord.
And St. Joseph then became an important figure. We do have to take a break, Mark, and I want to ask you about that. But we sometimes then now get the opposite, maybe extreme view, which is that essentially the Catholic Church blesses everything done by labor unions and the labor movement. We'll address that question with Mark Brumley as we continue our very special Labor Day edition of Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Catholic Answers Live.
Face it, it's tempting and easy to be a man of the world. Father Terence Ehrman has a challenge for you. Be a man of God instead. In his new book, Man of God, Father Ehrman draws on his experience counseling men who are struggling to live in the world but not be of the world. In a unique, easy-to-read format, he offers holy spiritual direction for all men who want to master themselves and be transformed from within. Order your copy of Man of God today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking resource by apologist Trent Horn. That one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into or back to the practice of the Catholic faith. And at $3 a copy when purchased in bulk, it's perfect for parish distribution and any of your adult faith formation needs. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Pope Francis said, "All of us are called to mature in our work as evangelizers. We want to have better training, a deepening love, and a clearer witness to the gospel. St. Paul Street Evangelization's online school of evangelization will equip you with the tools you need to be an effective evangelist. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you're unable to give, we'll set you up for free. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
We're not taking live calls. However, we invite you to stay with us and enjoy the broadcast. This is Catholic Answers Live.
I hope you got your feet up and you're sipping on something cold on this Labor Day. Traditional, very traditional now. I don't know. I don't know when Labor Day started, now that I started talking about it, but at least in my lifetime, it's the tradition to take it easy, take Labor Day off and kind of wrap up the summer on Labor Day. Hope you're doing that and glad you're here with us at Catholic Answers, where we're doing a very special Labor Day edition of Catholic Answers Live today. Mark Brumley, President and CEO of Ignatius Press, is our guest, and we are discussing Catholic social teaching. So in the first segment there, Mark, we established that in the 19th century, these labor movements started in response to genuine, real injustices. The Catholic Church endorsed, but not in an unmeasured way, in a measured way, these labor movements in Pope Leo's Rerum Novarum and in subsequent teachings of the Church. And that means today that you have to be completely pro-labor if you're Catholic. Is that correct, Mark?
Well, of course, we should be pro-labor in the sense that we should always be supportive of people who provide for themselves by their work. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we have to agree with a particular segment in the political sphere that says, well, we represent the interests of workers and things of that sort. That's a whole different question. There's a historic association there with the labor movement in the United States. But reasonable Catholics can disagree about the best way to ensure that people who provide for their existence by their work have what they need. Different public policy stances, different approaches that can be taken. Now, I have my own views, which, of course, are 100% correct, but I'm actually...
I've noticed that about you, Mark.
That's right. We can have a good discussion about what's the best way to do that.
Yeah.
But the point is that even though there is a support, the Church has a support for those in need and for those who depend upon their labor as the source for their material needs. It doesn't cash out to a particular political agenda.
Yeah. One thing, however, I would like to just close out before we move on to the other aspects of Catholic social teachings from labor, and that is the Church does place a very serious – I mean, you tease me sometimes, Mark, and I'm did today about being a communist, and I'm not a communist, but
– wait a minute. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Are you now or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party?
Wow. That's a very original question. You just come up with that?
I did. I get asked that a lot too, by the way.
Mark McCarthy, our guest. do you get that asked that a lot? Well, but the Church is – so it's – irrefutable, I would say, that the Church is an opponent of worldwide communism, has been, and as a matter of fact, the most important opponent of worldwide communism. Why? What is it that the Church sees in communism that it opposes, even while it supports the labor movement?
I would say, well, communism traditionally, especially when we're talking about this in a Marxist context, is atheistic. It has a materialistic interpretation of human beings and their origins. It has an interpretation of the course of history that says history is going to this classless society, and in route there is the dictatorship of the proletariat, which the state controls everything and all the means of production, and that there should be no private property, that's abolished, and so on. So there are tenets associated with Marxism or Marxist communism that are at odds with what the Catholic faith or Christianity more generally holds about God and man's relationship to God and so on. So, yes, we are for labor and people who, as they say, earn their material existence by their labor, by their work, but that doesn't mean that we subscribe to the idea that there should be no private property or that the state that the sphere of the state is total, that there's no domain of privacy, no domain of human freedom, but all human activities are subordinate to the state and the state's control in the interest of an alleged service to democracy or the proletariat and so on.
So it's anti-human in the sense of being, individualist. I don't know if that's the right word, but would it be fair to say then this anti-human view in favor of large kind of social structures and political economic structures is really the opposite of the Catholic social teaching, where at the beginning, or you could almost call it the first principle, I'll propose this to you anyways, and you correct me if I'm wrong, of Catholic social teaching is that the human person, the individual human person, and the social human person is the end, is the very purpose of everything we do socially.
Yes, and that's articulated in the Catechism of the Catholic Church. It's articulated in the Compendium of the Social Doctrine of the Church. It's found in any number of modern expressions of Catholic social teaching, Gaudium et Spes from the Second Vatican Council, and so on. But I think we need to understand that correctly, because there is this person-society relationship. The Catholic understanding, and probably, again, more broadly, the Christian understanding of personhood entails the type of being who finds his fulfillment in relation to other beings like him. So you have all built in to the very core idea of personhood in the Catholic ethical understanding of that there is relationship. We sometimes, in the classical tradition, we'll talk about man as a social animal, and that's one form in which that takes. It may sound like I'm being a stickler about this, but it's an important point, and the point is related to two words that are in a certain tension with Catholic teaching. On the one hand, the word individual, and on the other hand, the word collective. We associate communism or Marxism with collectivism, the idea that the collective or the group is really the most important thing, and that everybody, the members of the group, exist to serve that collective. They have no individual value. Their value is only insofar as they contribute to the collective, or ultimately to the state. Although in most versions of Marxism, there's this idea of the withering away of the state. It's kind of interesting. Christopher Dawson, the famous English historian, wrote a book called Progress in Religion. He wrote a number of books that deal with the topic of social history, social development, social theory. And he shows how Marxism really is a kind of secularized version of the Judeo-Christian understanding of history. So Christianity looks forward to the kingdom of God to come. Marxism twists that in an atheistic, materialist way, looks forward to the classless society that's somehow going to magically come about after there's this change in consciousness brought about by a dictatorship of the proletariat of the state. So that's sort of the collectivist side of it. But on the other side, there is individualism. And here the church has been critical, too, of a certain understanding of individualism that would see the individual person not just as the foundation for society, but almost as autonomous, self-directed. It's all about me as an individual. Yeah. And I only have obligations to others insofar as I freely choose to assume them. That's the kind of the individualist, and I would say radical libertarian view. And not all libertarians hold that radical view. Most libertarians would say, for example, that you have obligations to your children, you have obligations to your parents, you have moral obligations. Now, where the church would have a problem with some of them is they'd want to limit those obligations to personal moral obligations and not see a social obligation or a state obligation. But anyway, the point is that this radical form of individualism would hold life is all about me getting what I want. Yeah, sure, I can decide to be loving to other people or to be good to other people, or I could decide to be otherwise. I'm only bound to the extent that I choose to bind myself into commitments and relationships and so on. So that's sort of the other radical extreme. And the Catholic view is in the middle. The Catholic view says, yes, there is the dignity of the human person, and each and every individual human person has a dignity, inherent dignity and value that ought to be recognized. There are obligations that come with that inherent dignity and value that have to do with acting for the good and so on. And because there are obligations that we have, there are certain rights that come with that. We'll talk more about that, I guess, in a moment.
We will indeed. Mark Brumley is our guest, the president of Ignatius Press. And our topic, because it's Labor Day, we're talking about labor, but also the Catholic teaching in which the teaching on labor is contained, a large body of teaching called the social teaching of the Catholic Church. We'll be back with more on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Hello, this is Bishop Jeffrey Monfort, and Bishop of the Diocese of Steubenville. Make sure you keep it on Catholic Answers Live. God bless you.
Did Jesus even exist? How can we trust what the Bible says about him? Didn't Jesus' followers invent a lot of myths about him based on stories of pagan gods? In 20 Answers, The Real Jesus, you'll find smart, solid answers to these questions and many more, taking on the claims of modern skeptics about Jesus' life, his teaching, and his legacy, providing compelling evidence that the historical Jesus and the Christ of faith are one and the same. 20 Answers, The Real Jesus is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com and take a look at this exciting new series from Catholic Answers.
Behold Your Mother, a biblical and historical defense of the Marian doctrines by apologist and speaker Tim Staples is an apologetics tour de force, which delves deeper than ever before into the Catholic Church's teaching on our Blessed Mother, from her Immaculate Conception to the Annunciation, from her title as Mother of God to her perpetual virginity, from her Assumption into Heaven to her role as co-redemptrix. Tim gives you the facts and backs them up with solid biblical evidence in the way only Tim Staples can do. Call 1-888-291-8000, log on to Catholic.com, or visit a good Catholic bookstore in your area and get your copy of Behold Your Mother today. Now available in paperback and as an ebook. Get your copy today.
Most reality TV leaves out half of reality, the faith that drives us from within. We're giving you the whole picture, real life and faith.
Chris Stefanik is on a journey to uncover the bold, courageous Catholic faith found in the hearts of people all over the world. Meet the everyday Catholics who inspire him as they show the world how amazing faith makes everyday life. Real Life Catholic, Tuesday at 11 p.m. Eastern on EWTN-TV.
Welcome back to our special Labor Day edition of Catholic Answers Live. Mark Brumley, our guest this hour. Mark, you left us with a clear, or you were, it would seem pretty clear to me. I don't know if you wanted to kind of flesh it out anymore, that the Catholic understanding of, or the basis of Catholic social teaching is neither individualistic, nor is it collectivist. It's
right.
It's somewhere in a happy medium there.
Right. So we say that there are individual rights, because there are individual responsibilities that we have as persons. The individual, by individual, I don't mean individualism in that narrow sense. We are persons, and that by virtue of being persons, we have certain ties that we have with others. And so we can stress that each and every individual person has a dignity and worth, yes. And each and individual person has certain rights that come with his dignity as a person, because he has responsibilities to fulfill on the basis of that dignity. So that's one side of it. That on the other side, we recognize, though, that we're not just a bunch of autonomous, disconnected individuals out there running around doing our own thing who just happen to come together because it's mutually advantageous, and we work out these deals basically. We enter into these contractual relationships, and our only obligations are the obligations of contract that we've freely chosen to enter into. And that's a kind of, you push that to its extreme view, where you're emphasizing the collectivity of things, and that's where you do get to a kind of socialist, communist model, when it's pushed to where the individual ceases to have a value. So the church is in between. The church is saying each individual has a value, individual person has a value, but there is also a common good or a social good that society exists to serve. And some of that social good involves obligations I have simply because I'm here, not because I've freely chosen those obligations, but I have them because I'm here. So I have certain obligations to my parents, I have certain obligations to my children, I have certain obligations to my neighbor, and not all those obligations are binding on me just because I've chosen them. Some of them are binding on me because of who I am and who these other people are. So that's a much more kind of holistic understanding of the individual person's relationship to society that the church has. And you can see tendencies. So in our society, and by the way, I think this vision that I've outlined, broadly construed, is the same as what is the dominant view in Western, use the word liberal democracies, but you've got tendencies in one direction or the other. So some people are going to emphasize the freedom of the individual and downplay the role of society and downplay the role of government. Other people are going to emphasize the role of government and downplay the role of individual or the role of individual freedom or individual choice. So you're going to have these tendencies, and Catholics can come down on different sides of that, provided they recognize the individual person's dignity and rights on the one hand, social obligations and the rights, the role of government in protecting individuals and the common good on the other.
A word that kind of evokes very strong emotions in our world today. I wonder if you can fit this in, given that. I mean, what I'm getting from you is there's a moral dimension to each individual life, but there's also a moral dimension to our social life, and the moral demands of social life can only be met socially. Well, let me throw a word at you, or a little phrase, and get your take on it, because as I said, it provokes enormous amounts of emotion, and that is social justice.
Yes.
Is there such a thing in Catholic social teaching? And if there is, what does it mean?
Yeah, there is. Well, of course, people debate exactly how we should understand social justice, but we can think about social justice in the following way. We can think of justice between individuals. So I owe you, you come to contract with me to work in my vineyard, and you do the work, and I owe you compensation for that. So we have the justice between us that we can think about. We can also think about justice in society more broadly construed. So when you think of all of the conditions of a society in which people in their day-to-day activities, whether they're talking in their family life or in their employment life or more broadly in walking down the street and the freedom they have to walk down the street, we can think about all those social conditions that exist. When social conditions exist so that everybody can get what is due them, everyone can get what he deserves, and everyone can fulfill his obligations to other people, then we have what we call social justice. It's not just the justice between individuals. It's not just the justice I as an individual might owe to the community. I gave the example of exchange between two persons, but I owe things to my society. I have an obligation to pay taxes to support the institutions of my society and to support others who benefit from those. But it's not just that individual relationship I have with society, but the whole set of conditions in society. So that's what we talk about social justice. We're saying we need to have a society in which the conditions, the institutions, the laws, the common practices are such that people can get the things that they need And in getting the things that they need, they can have their needs met so they can, in turn, fulfill their obligations to other people.
Well, so some if we could take a specific case then. So some people will say if I don't know, a state or the federal government or something cuts a benefit that people have been given, and maybe it's some kind of welfare benefit. And then the people will invoke the idea of social justice to say, well, that's not right when you cut poor people's benefits. And you know, we know the argument, and I'm not trying to make a caricature of the argument, but why are you cutting taxes for the rich and you're cutting benefits for the poor? But others may make the argument that there's a lack of social justice in the giving of the benefit, because it's actually depriving people of the motivation and all those things that are required to live a fully human life. That in some ways, what you're encouraging is a kind of stagnation in communities and individuals when you're overly indulgent in these benefits. How are we supposed to work out those kinds of debates?
Well, first of all, we have to be clear on the principles. Then we're going to have to look at the situation that we see, and we're going to have to come to a judgment on the basis of our principles and our judgment about the situation, about what the best policy ought to be that deals with the widest range of cases in the most effective way. So what I've just described is what in the old days used to be called look, judge, and act. Look at the situation with the mind of the principles of Catholic social teaching. Make a judgment or assessment. Is there a problem here? What's the nature of the problem? What are the possible solutions or the solution that seems to fit best with the problem that we're addressing? And then act accordingly. So look, judge, and act. And the example that you gave, when you're trying to deal with the question of social welfare, where we're presuming people are unable through their own efforts. Remember I said earlier, well, the ideal is that people are able through their own efforts to take care of their needs. That's the ideal. And some people do that as they have lots of assets and money invested and they don't have to labor every day. Some of them choose to do so anyway, even though they have the means to support themselves. Doesn't require them to work every day, but they choose to do so. And other people have to, in order to get what they need to support themselves, they have to work every day. Okay. The ideal is whether you have it because you're vastly wealthy and you've invested your money well and your money is working for you, or you have a job and you're working every day. Either scenario, the ideal is that you're able to take care of your needs and your obligations through your own wealth or your own activity. What happens when people can't do that? What do? Do we let people starve? Do we let people be deprived? Well, the Catholic Church's approach to this, and it's an approach widely shared, not just by Catholics, but other Christians and other people who aren't Christians at all, other religions or no particular religion, is a sense that there's a social obligation not just I as an individual may have to give charity, but that society has to make sure that everybody in society has what anybody needs to lead a decent human life. Ideally, you do that by providing the circumstances so that they can find jobs. But in situations where people can't, despite their best efforts, find a job, then you have things like social welfare programs. Now, we can have a debate, because when you have a social welfare program, it can be structured in such a way that it attends to people's needs and helps them get on their feet, does what it's supposed to do. You can also have welfare programs that are poorly designed, that are insufficiently aware of a disincentive to work and all kinds of other issues like that. People can debate those questions, but how do we decide? Well, it comes down, in one sense, it's a matter of principle. The principle, we want everybody to be able to employ themselves or to support themselves through their own activity, on the one hand. On the other hand, recognition that some people won't be able to do that and will need the help of society. On the other hand, what particular policy that we form and how we come to decide what the policy is going to be, it's going to come down to actually studying the question, looking at the data, looking at what's going on in society, and forming public policies accordingly based upon those principles. So it may be that you're going to have some, and then let me, because we're not just looking at the question of what are the principles here, we're saying what are the actual situation, what's going on in society, what are the incentives and disincentives that people are experiencing, what's the nature of the problem, the particular people who are unemployed, and so on. Because those all have to do with looking at facts and judgments about facts and judgments about causes. You could potentially have Catholics equally committed to the same principles, principle of everybody being able to provide for themselves out of their own activity, and recognizing that some people, through no fault of their own, can't do that, committed to society having a role to play in helping them meet their needs, committed to those principles. Catholics might disagree about what the cause of the problem is or the scope of the problem. And so they're going to formulate different public policy positions, some more liberal perhaps, some more conservative perhaps, based upon their assessment of the situation, what's causing the problem. Is that too abstract, or does that get to your question?
Well, it leaves me with this impression, and I wonder if I should just be left with this impression, and we have to take a break. And so my impression then that I get from you is that there is in fact such a thing as social justice, because there can be social injustice.
Absolutely.
We could arrange society so that it's unjust to individuals or groups, but that to know what is actually socially just takes hard work. It's not always just self-evident.
Right. We can articulate principles that will describe a socially just situation, but what you actually have to do in a particular society with its particular problems to make that society more just, well, that does take hard work. It takes hard work to do it, but even before you get to the level of action, it takes hard work to assess what's actually causing the problem. You know, is this a systemic problem? Is there something wrong with the system, how we've structured the system? Or is this a problem with individuals, individual failure in virtue? What's the actual source of the problem? And Catholics might disagree about what the actual source of the problem is. And then when they do, they're going to disagree to some degree about what's the proper solution to the problem.
We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Mark Brumley on Catholic social teaching on this Labor Day on Catholic Answers Live.
We're glad you're with us. Stick around for more Catholic Answers Live.
It may be true for you, but not for me. How often have you heard this during a discussion with friends or family? Whether talking about faith, morality, politics, or just the basic notion of truth, so many people are captive to the notion of relativism. The belief that reality is something we decide. In his new audio presentation, Your Truth, My Truth, apologist Carlo Broussard breaks down this intellectual cancer, looking at the different kinds of relativism we regularly encounter and demonstrating how, ultimately, they collapse under the weight of their own incoherence. More importantly, Carlo makes a powerful case for the existence of objective truth, showing you how to explain to others that right and wrong are both real and universal, because it was designed that way by God. Order your copy of Your Truth, My Truth by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Luke 4:16, in his native synagogue, Jesus read aloud the scripture passage, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to bring glad tidings to the poor." He then acknowledged that the passage was about him. At first they were amazed, but then became skeptical. He told them that no prophet was ever welcome in his native place. Highly insulted, the people tried to throw him down a cliff, but he escaped. Have you ever reflected that one is never humbly insulted? Have we ever seen people fight out of righteous humility? It was humility that drove him to such resentment. I think you catch my drift. It was their pride that kept those people from recognizing who Jesus was. The same can happen to us. I like the bumper sticker I saw one day. It read, "Too blessed to be oppressed." Isn't that the truth? I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
We're not taking live calls. However, we invite you to stay with us and enjoy the broadcast. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back again to our very special Labor Day edition of Catholic Answers Live. Mark Brumley, our guest, and when we before we went to the break, Mark, we're getting to this idea that Catholic social teaching, while it is a very real thing and a very important development in the history of the Catholic Church, this social teaching, it is not always easy to access what a particular moment or a particular situation demands from us in the light of this social teaching. So you want to, did you want to flesh out a little bit more about how Catholics can come to very, very different views?
Yeah, some things are direct violations of principles, so it's not a matter of what's the best way to go about. There's not the best way to, for example, kill unborn children, or what's the best way to indiscriminately bomb civilians in war, you know, with Catholics coming on different sides about those issues. Those are principial things. You can never intentionally kill an unborn child. You can never intentionally indiscriminately bomb civilian populations, you know, in war. It's not like what's the best way to arrange the society to be racist. You know, you can't. It's unjust, okay? Inherently unjust. So not everything is a matter of what's called prudential judgment debate. There's some principles that are pretty clear. Some wrongs and problems are so manifest and obvious that there's not really a lot of room for debate on those. But other things, there's a lot of room. So we talk about taxes. Do we increase taxes or do we have tax cuts? You know, people say, well, we want to increase taxes to provide for government programs, including those that help the poor. And there's an argument to be made for that. That's an expression of solidarity. That's one of the S words that you often hear in Catholic social teaching. Solidarity is this notion of social charity or social friendship, or we're all in this together, you know, type of thing. On the other hand, somebody might say, well, we should cut taxes because taxes are too high. Businesses are fleeing the country, or they're doing things that are not really helpful for employment or the economy and employing people. So we want to cut taxes to encourage businesses to hire more people, and thus we're going to employ more people, and so on and so forth. And they're going to make an argument that we need to decentralize government and relieve the burden of government on individual taxpayers and on businesses. And they might use this other S word, which is subsidiarity, which basically says, you know, an organization or a group should be allowed to do what it does best, and government should help it do that. Higher levels of organization in society ought not to come in and take over the responsibility of these smaller, lower subordinate groups. And so you're going to have a debate there on this question of taxes. And you might see a Catholic coming down on one side, committed to the same Catholic principles, or he or she might come down on the other side of the issue, based on the same principles. The Second Vatican Council, in its its Pastoral Constitution on the Church of the Modern World, Gaudium et Spes, has a whole section where it says, you know, it may be the case that different solutions come to mind to different Catholics, and one group of Catholics shouldn't say the other group of Catholics is not being Catholic simply because it proposes a different solution, provided we're all starting from the same principles of our faith, and not, you know, throwing aside a principle of the faith because it's inconvenient for us. So it's just a point I wanted to make. We could take this and we can look at this not just with respect to the question of raising taxes or lowering taxes, but other public policy questions that come into play. We're going to have different sides of this issue. Now, I've got my own particular perspectives, as I said before, and those are 100% correct. But I'm going to allow the rest of you folks to come to your own positions on things, even though they may be at odds with me.
Who is always 100% correct? I got you. Okay, so we do have a tendency, though, to prefer to think of principles very strongly when they agree with the conclusion we want to come to, and to kind of gloss principles when they don't get us to the conclusion we want.
And that's why a kind of social justice examination of conscience is necessary for the individual Catholic citizen, participant in society, civil society. Citizens in the United States hold the highest office in the land, the office of citizenship. And when we vote, or when we run for office, or when we're engaged in political activity in society in some other form, we need to do an examination of conscience and ask ourselves, am I acting out of self-interest, or am I acting out of the interest of the common good? Is this something that I'm trying to get for my particular good that I wouldn't get for I wouldn't allow for you if you were in the same situation as me.
Yeah.
You know, those are important questions that we should ask ourselves, because it's very easy to take a position because in the back of our minds, you know, we see ourselves as self-interested. We're going to benefit from this, even at the expense of the common good or the rights of others. So we have to be very careful about that.
Before we end, one of the things that is now, it seems to me, a great opponent of Catholic social teaching is where the sexual revolution has brought us. What is the role then of family in Catholic social teaching, and why do we Catholics stick to these ideas about family?
Right. We talked earlier about this idea of the dignity of the human person. In some ways, you can think of the human person as the key element of society, but in many other respects, and this is more consistent with a Catholic way of looking at it, the family is the key element, the foundational element in a society. And we can know that a society is thriving if its family life is thriving. And that's family founded on marriage as a unit of one man, one woman, not saying other people in other situations are wicked and depraved or bad, but that's really what family is, and that's the foundation of society. And we talk about in the context of Labor Day and talking about work, we can say, does the work that someone does contribute to the well-being of his family? Or does he have to work at such a level, such an intensity, that it takes him away from his family? It harms his family, helps his family in the sense that he's providing for his family, but it harms his family in the sense that he's taken away from the family. And if the answer is he's harming the family because he's taken away from the family so much by his work, then we have a situation where we have to say we need to create a society where we can foster jobs, so people can earn their living, provide for the needs of their family without working so much and having to be away from the family. So the family becomes central to the question of labor and work, central to the question of politics. How do we understand our politics? Particular policies in our society, political policy, whether it's the federal level or the state level or the city level, are these policies that foster the stability of family, married relationship, of husbands and wives having children, raising their children, being able to support their children, provide for their children's education and well-being? And that's really the criteria by which a Catholic should want to evaluate political platforms, policies of individual politicians, and so on.
So one thing I maybe didn't come through clear to me there is, so why does this biological family have to be the unit that Catholics are so attached to?
Well, of course, you can have adoptive families, and so it's not biological in that sense. But this is a whole other conversation, but we have to ask, when we as a society honor certain relationships, why do we honor them? Do we honor them because we like them, or do we honor them because of their contribution to human good, the good of society? And I think most people would say it's because of the good of society. You can have whatever private relationships you want, but why does society need to recognize that? Well, it doesn't. It only needs to recognize it insofar as recognizing it and honoring it contributes to the good of society. Well, there's no relationship that's more foundational than the relationship of a man and woman coming together, the relationship by which new human beings, we talk about human beings having this inherent dignity, these rights and responsibilities. Well, if they're so important, if they're what society is so much about in many respects, then surely the union by which they're brought into being and the people who bring them into being exercise responsibility for the human beings they bring into being, surely that union, that relationship ought to be specially honored, ought to be encouraged, fostered. So that's the answer to your question. And that's marriage between one man and one woman.
It's a vast kind of canopy of teachings to help us with our social life, this social teaching of the church. We just barely scratched the surface. Extremely helpful for me, though, Mark. I hope very helpful for the listener. Thanks, Mark Brumley, for being with us.
I'm happy to be with you. Have a blessed Labor Day.
Oh, you too. Thanks. And all of our listeners, too, have a blessed Labor Day. Tomorrow, we will be back with live programs, open forum, both hours. Any question you've got on the life, the faith, the history of the Catholic Church, we'll tackle it then. See you tomorrow.
God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.